Morn's shipment of Livanian beets has been sitting in Cargo Bay 3 for over 2 weeks, and it's starting to rot. Morn was an excellent sparring partner for Worf, and Jadzia Dax had a crush on Morn, but he wasn't interested. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Seventh Rule with Sirach Lofton.
Hello, hello.
My name is Ryan T. Huss. Today, we're doing a review of Deep Space Nine, Season 6, Episode 12, entitled Who Mourns for Morn, with very special guest, writer Mark O'Connell. Hello, Mark.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, welcome.
This episode was directed by Victor Lobel, written by, of course, Mark O'Connell. What a coincidence. And this was February 4th, 1998. This is going to be a fun one. Let's do it.
Mark, how do you pronounce your middle name?
Eugene. Garot? Eugene.
Maybe you've heard of it, yeah. Sirach. Eugene.
Yeah, I've heard of that, but that's pretty easy because it says Garrett.
Right.
Okay. I'll briefly explain. Back then, when I was doing my writing for DS9 in the 90s, in my first marriage, I had taken my wife's name, so I was Mark Garrett O'Connell. Cool. These days, I'm back to just Mark O'Connell. So.
Okay.
But yeah,
okay.
I'm glad you brought that up. I meant to explain that right away, but that's kind of important.
Well, it's good to understand why there's a distinction. I'm sure there's a lot of Mark O'Connells. It's kind of a, you know, it's not a rarity of a name. So just to distinguish, I just wanted to make sure because they do distinguish here. But yeah, this was a fun episode. This was a fun episode, Mark. I'm glad to have you here so we can get into discussing it.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I had a ball writing the episode. I just watched it again shortly before we got together here, and I was glad to see that it still made me laugh just as much as it used to. It's got some good stuff in it.
You know, it's interesting because it's one of those, you know, fairly rare comedic episodes, and certainly a bottle episode. But this isn't the first episode that you've written. That was actually the fourth, which is really interesting, and some very notable ones. For the Cause, you had also written. That is when it's an episode with Eddington. It's when Cassidy Yates betrays Sisko. There was also Meridian, which is when you attempted to do the hardest thing, I think, in television writing, which is convince us that two people fell in love in two scenes, which is just so hard to do. And what was the first one? I forgot.
Second Sight.
Second Sight. Great one with a Nana Visitor where she is a Cardassian, right?
No, Second Sight is Ben Sisko's first love.
Right. Sorry, I was thinking of Second Skin.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Second Sight is Sisko falls in love with a woman who isn't really there. She turns out to be a psychoprojective telepath, which is one of my favorite made up science fiction words ever. A psychoprojective telepath. Wow.
Sounds like a song.
Yeah. But also, I was involved in one episode of Next Generation. I didn't get my name in the credits because my contribution was so tiny that the Writers Guild didn't even have a category for it. I had pitched some stories to Brannon Braga. He liked one of them. A week or two later, he called me up in a panic and he said, Mark, Mike Piller just threw away our script for next week. We need a script in like 24 hours and we want to use your story. And I said, hey, great, let's do it. So he did. So Brannon wrote the script in 24 hours. And he said, you know, he said, sorry, we would love to hire you to write the script, but we would never put a freelancer in this kind of a vice to try to get an actual script. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, looks like we lost you for a second there, Mark. Sure. That's too bad because he's probably telling us which episode it is right now. we're waiting the whole time. We're like,
24 hours.
Oh, we lost a second there. Mark.
Oh, dang it. It's telling me my connection's unstable. Okay, you got me back?
Yeah, you're back. But we've got to know, we lost you for a few seconds. What was that episode?
Timescape.
Now, all of the Star Trek fans are like, oh my God, Timescape. And I'm like, I don't remember which one that is. Which one is that?
Well, it was a bottle show, and it was based on a really simple. I like puzzle shows. I like puzzle episodes. So this was a bottle show and a puzzle show, and basically Picard and Geordi and Troy and Data are returning via shuttlecraft to the Enterprise from a conference they attended. And when they get to the Enterprise, they find that it's locked in battle with a Romulan ship, but both ships are in suspended animation. But to complicate things, they froze just at the instant the Romulans fired the kill shot.
Yeah.
So they're faced with this puzzle of trying to get time moving again without that kill shot destroying the Enterprise in the process.
Remember that? Super fun.
That's the one.
Very cool. And this episode, Who Mourns for Morn, was to me actually a little bit reminiscent of the, I don't know if it's got a genre type, but it reminded me of the Self-Sealing Stem Bowls episode with Sirach and Aaron, you know, or the one where Jake and Nog are trying to get the Willie Mays baseball card. Like one of these episodes where, you know, you're going to this place and then to this place and they're trying to figure this thing out. And the plot is unraveling bit by bit, you know, and it's funny, it's comedic, it's stressful. And it just kind of had that kind of feel to me. Were any of the previous episodes of Next Generation or Deep Space Nine kind of like influences on writing this episode?
Actually, no. I'll tell you what the influence was, and this might make you laugh, but the way I first pitched this story to the staff let me
jump in there real quick. I want to guess before you say.
Oh, good, yeah, good, guess, good, 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 exciting.
I want to make a guess. So when I was watching the episode, I felt a Western feel. So that's my guess. Is there a Western origin to the story?
No.
Mobster.
Sorry about that.
Hey, it was a guess. That's why I wanted to guess, at least, you know, before the fact.
Right, was, now, everybody in the guess, live though. Chat, make your guesses now.
Right. So tell us. Sorry, Mark.
I pitched it as Citizen Kane in outer space.
Okay.
That's what sold it. And the background to that is, Sirach, I'm sure you're aware of this. Morn was a very popular character on the show, despite the fact that he never spoke. He never did anything. I mean, he just never did anything. But he was such a funny running joke on the show that a lot of writers, including the staff writers, the producers, a lot of writers really wanted to and tried to do stories about Worf. Morn. And but there were these two huge stumbling blocks with doing a Morn story. And one was his face isn't articulated, so he can't actually speak. And I knew from, I've been involved with the show long enough to know that there was no way Paramount would pay for a new articulated mask for Mark Sheppard, the actor playing Morn. And I knew they also wouldn't pay him extra for reciting dialogue, you know? So you're basically faced with, how do you do a story about a character who isn't going to talk and whose face can't move, basically? And I just had this brainstorm one day of, there's only one way to tell a Morn story. Kill Morn off at the first scene. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I latched onto that, I realized that this story could have a lot of parallels to Citizen Kane, which I don't want to bore people with a recap, but basically Citizen Kane is like tracing a guy's life through flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And I thought this would be such a fun way to give Morn an episode, is to have him die in the teaser. And then we learn about who Morn really is over the course of the episode as Quark digs into his past, because Quark ends up, sole beneficiary of Morn's will. So that's how the story came together. And that's how I pitched it. Citizen Kane in outer space. And the producers loved it. It was like the perfect Morn story.
Yeah.
But they immediately changed the story, which, you know, of course happens.
What was the original pitch? I mean, like what was changed from the original to how they flipped it?
The big thing that changed was in my original pitch, and unfortunately, I have copies of virtually everything I've ever written, but I can't find the copy of that original pitch. But the big thing in the original pitch that I put together was that Morn turned out to be not only a famous and powerful politician, but sort of a galactic emperor and a man of just immense power and wealth and influence, who had just been slumming it at Deep Space Nine at Quark's bar for a while, because just to get away from all the hassle of being such a powerful person.
It's because he's such a smooth talker, that guy.
Exactly. So you know, and that fit into the whole Citizen Kane thing, you know, also. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, finding out that, oh, Citizen Kane, well, he's responsible for this and for that. So I thought that all worked for Who Mourns for Morn. But then I'm not sure who did this work on the story. I always assume it was Ira Bear, because I think he's the one who told me what was going to happen. Ira was a great guy to work with, by the way. I loved working with Ira.
Really?
And so he said, here's what we want you to do with the story, Mark. Instead of Citizen Kane in space, we want you to do Charade in space. All right. Are either of you familiar with the movie Charade with Audrey Hepburn and... I believe Cary Grant.
I thought you just meant because he doesn't speak.
Oh, no, it's an actual movie. It's an actual caper movie from the 60s. It's this lighthearted romantic comedy caper movie with Audrey Hepburn and Cary Grant. And it's super simple story. Audrey Hepburn's husband dies under mysterious circumstances. All these strange people start showing up at his funeral and they start stalking her. And she eventually learns that her husband was actually a crook and had been the mastermind of this huge heist, but he had hidden the loot. And all these creepy people who were starting to appear in her life were part of his gang. And they were all after the loot, and they all just assumed that Audrey knew where it was.
Okay.
So that's the story we ended up doing with Who Mourns for Morn, which you're aware of now. But that's how it got its start. We switched from Citizen Kane to Charade. And the funny thing that is, though, I had forgotten this, but when I watched the episode again just now, I realized that the version that I had pitched, where Morn turns out to be a prince and a king and an emperor of, you know, the entire mm-hmm. galaxy. Mm-hmm. We did use a little of that in the closing scenes of Who Mourns for Morn. There are a couple of minutes when they're trying to pass Morn off as this galactic emperor and a prince.
Right.
So right. Part of the original story did sort of make it onto the final draft.
It did.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It did.
Well, that's really cool because, yeah, when you mentioned that, I remember them saying, oh, the royal family has bequeathed him with, you know, whatever, this and that.
Right.
And then as a viewer, you believe it. You go, oh, interesting twist. And then it twists again. But then I'd like to look at it through Sirach's eyes a lot of times, because I haven't seen this in a while, but I've still seen it. So I kind of know what's uh-huh. coming. Sirach, were you just along for the ride, or did you kind of know what to expect or guess anything?
I was along for the ride. I didn't know what to expect. I guess at some point I thought Odo knew more than what he actually did. I thought he was like part of this, the end game, you know, like we played a trick on you. So I was constantly like, okay, where's this going to go? Where is this going to go? When Laurel pops out of the mud bath, I'm thinking, okay.
Which looked like hot chocolate, by the way. Looked delicious.
Yeah, I was like, well, you know, how come I wasn't invited to the set that day? So, as I was watching the story, I kind of didn't know where it was going. And part of me felt like once it was revealed about the heist, that's when I felt like, oh, is this like a Western that I've seen before? Is this like the good, the bad, and the ugly? Is this one of those kinds of movies where, you know, it's all about this, you know, this heist and, you know, who's going to end up with the bag at the end. So that's where my kind of imagination went, Mark, when I guessed Western. But I really like the fact that, you know, this works, in my opinion, because Armin is such a good actor.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, he's carrying the entire weight of the story. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much, you know, based on him. And he's done this before. We've seen him do this before, mm-hmm. usually to give other actors a break. You know, like, hey, you guys take it. You know, you guys take the night off. Armin will do it this week. So, mm-hmm. and he's capable, very capable, which is, definitely. You know, this is an example of it to me. He doesn't even have some of the usual kind of crutches that somebody would have, which is their, you know, other co-stars and stuff. He's kind of on his own in this a lot. And bringing in new guest stars. So you have the guest star aliens, you have the guest star woman character, you have the guest star guy who was supposed to be part of the law enforcement. You know, I like the line where he says, "Well, as soon as we walk you over to security and you know fill out some paperwork, you know, it made it sound legit. You know, made it sound like he was really undercover or something." So I actually like that the dialogue there. But yes, ultimately, I want to just you know give the credit to Armin for being able to carry these kinds of stories that are, you know, bottle episodes that are introducing new guest stars. And he still brings that kind of energy to it. Mm-hmm. He, you know, he brings that bounce and keeps the roll going. So the pace was really nice to me, but I think the best part was that I didn't know where it came from. So I've never watched Charade, Mark. So I don't know the origin of the story. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it was like me trying to figure out, have I seen this before? Where have I seen this kind of a concept? And also, I don't know where it's going to happen. So it kind of left me guessing. Ryan, you saw it before, but I didn't know what was going to happen. But one of my big questions as I was watching the episode was, you know, who has that painting that's behind you, Ryan? The painting that they used for Morn's funeral.
Yeah.
It was curious to me, just like, where did that end up? You know, who has that in their possession? That painting would be pretty cool to have.
It sure would be. I assume it's the same person who painted the Matador painting in Morn's quarters.
Yeah, it got torn up. Right.
The black velvet painting, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Another clever idea with the microchip kind of thing being hidden in the art. I like when stories kind of go in that way where it's an unexpected thing. You know, it's like him getting hit over the head leads to the next thing. And it was kind of like... you know, I really like treasure hunt movies and things about treasures and maps and Indiana Jones type of stuff.
Yeah.
And so they played on that kind of childlike, you know, thing inside of me that really likes those kinds of stories where, you know, they have this treasure map and they're trying to figure out where the gold is or, you know, King Solomon's mines and all of these kinds of, you know, where is the gold? Where is the treasure hidden? And I like those kinds of movies as well. So another aspect of this episode that I like.
You know, Sirach, that's the genre I was trying to think of earlier. That's what it is. It's a treasure hunt kind of episode where, you know, you're unraveling this and you're piecing this mystery together and they're trying to get whatever that thing is. And I was, while I was watching, I was thinking, Mark, was this the kind of episode as you're writing it that you're making yourself laugh when you're picturing it? You know, like, because a lot of times you can kind of picture it and it's making you laugh the more you're thinking about it. Or was it something that just kind of became more funny when you actually saw it?
Option one, I was definitely going for cracking myself up as I wrote it. And that was easy to do. I wouldn't say that I always write that way, but in this case, it was fairly easy to do because I was able to see and hear in my head how these actors would deliver these lines and how they would create these moments. And that was a big part of why I was laughing so much while I was writing the story, because I could be like, oh, I can so see Renee doing this bit. Oh, it's so going to be so perfect. You know, and watching it again this morning, there were a couple of moments that really gave me that feeling again. It really jumped out at me. And one was the scene where Quark has just figured out that he's really going to be rich fairly soon. And there's just a scene of him like walking down the corridor, walking down the hallway. He's got a real spring in his step. And all of a sudden he jumps up and clicks his heels.
Yeah.
It's such a perfect moment. That just cracked me up. And that final scene where Morn reappears and really Quark has to make us believe that he's actually having a conversation with someone who doesn't speak. So Quark has to fill in both sides of the conversation and he does it like flawlessly. It's amazing. Mm. That guy was Armin Shimerman, man. He was a wonder.
Yeah. Really, really set the tone for this episode. Another thing, there were moments that I liked. I liked the hologram Morn to begin with and Odo and that whole exchange between the two of them about the hologram. You know, how he's good for business. And when he's not around, he's, you know, I lose 5% in my sales. I love that dialogue. Really like the exchange between Dax and Worf, where Dax says, you know, I had a crush on him, you know.
and Worf can't let it go.
No, yeah, what do you mean he wasn't interested? I laughed on that one. I thought that because he was just like, wait a minute, about this Morn thing. And Sisko was in it very little, but there was such gravitas to the way he said, turn it off. When he walks into the quarters and he tells Quark to turn off the hologram. But the way he says it, it's like when your dad tells you something and, it's this is the final warning type thing. And I felt that kind of tone in his voice when he said it. It was like, oh, you know, hurry up and turn it off. Even though it was just, three words, he just delivers lines like that where it's like, wow, this guy's here and clearly he's the captain and the authoritative figure around here.
You know, we only have a minute before we got to go to our break, but real quick, I just want to jump on that. And I'm glad you brought up Sisko there because I feel like it might be kind of a novice move for an actor to think, oh, this is a comedic episode. I need to act more comedic, for example. But an actor like obviously Avery Brooks knows, hey, the writer knows what my character is going to act like. I don't need to ham it up unless it's called for. So he's still acting like Sisko. He's not acting like funny Sisko. You know, conversely, René Auberjonois is being funny because that's how it's written. He's having the in time of his life, Odo is. And we'll take our break here, but definitely want to talk about the acting. Also, Mark Alan Shepard, the actor that portrays Morn throughout the entire series, was actually in this episode, not in his Morn garb. And I might even do a Morn impression. I've been practicing. So everybody, if you know where he was, say it now, because we're going to give it away. We'll be right back on the seventh rule.
Oh, man.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Hey everybody, welcome back to The Seventh Rule with Sorok Lofton and very special guest, Mark O'Connell. Very quickly, here are the trivioids. I tried to make them all mourn all the time, because when are we ever going to get the chance to do this again? Have an episode about mourn, right? Here we go. Mourn's shipment of Livanian beets has been sitting in Cargo Bay 3 for over 2 weeks and is starting to rot. Mourn's ship got caught in an ion storm. Mourn was an excellent sparring partner for Worf. Dax had a crush on Mourn, but he wasn't interested. Mourn left everything to Quark in his will. Mourn slept in mud that looked like delicious hot chocolate. Mourn was married to Laurel for two wonderful years, theoretically. Chief O'Brien keeps Mourn's seat warm while he works, and then Bashir takes over. Mourn tips Quark by spitting in a glass. It's a Lurian custom. All right. So where was Mark Allen Shepard? Mark, it seemed like you were trying to guess.
I have no idea. I'm going to guess somebody at the funeral scene, because that's a pretty crowded visual with lots of faces we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, what's funny is while we were watching this episode, it hit me. I remembered people saying that Mark Allen Shepard, the actor, was in the episode without the makeup. And then it was right during that funeral scene. So I was like, oh, shoot, I better try to pay attention, see if I could catch him. And if not, we'll just ask the people in the free-for-all and they'll all know, of course. But then right when I was thinking it, there he was. He was the first guy that Quark grabbed during the funeral to say, let's always keep Mourn's seat warm.
Oh.
And he grabbed Mark Allen Shepard,
uh-huh,
and he sat him down. He said, here, come sit down there. That was him. And then later on in the scene, when I think Quark is talking to Odo or something like that, he's still there in the background. So that was more FaceTime, more quality lens time than I had expected, but he was in front of the camera for a good few minutes.
That's pretty cool.
No, I remember the moment. Yeah, the guy who you know, keep his seat warm, and then he.
Yeah.
So that's funny. So the person who took Mourn's seat was Mourn, and I mean, the irony is just amazing.
That's amazing. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Somebody was thinking, I can't take credit for that one. I think that's hilarious. And the funny thing is, he looks really surprised when Quark comes up and pulls him up to the bar.
Yeah, it was good acting. I noticed that, because you never know somebody that never has any lines and is behind a mask all the time. Sorry. No, we just lost you for a second.
Yeah, and you know, he has to.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, with Mark, you know, he has to do all his acting with his eyes. And he does a very good job of just rolling his eyes. And even that scene that you were alluding to earlier with Quark at the end, a lot of just eye rolls, eye movements, kind of like, yes, I did do it. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, my bad eyes. Yeah, you know,
he does have those.
yeah. So, and he does a great job. And I think you were talking earlier, Ryan, about the interplay with Odo and Quark. This episode also highlights the relationship that they have on screen, because, you know, there's so much playfulness between the two of them. Nobody brings that kind of spirit out of Odo like Quark. Quark likes kind of busting his balls about stuff. He likes watching him chase his tail around in a circle. And Quark loves, you know, to kind of show Odo that he's smarter and he can outsmart him. So the relationship is it's very playful, and it feels like a genuine friendship between the two of them. It's kind of like you watch the Andy Griffith Show. There would be like the neighborhood drunk that was always locked up in that jail cell.
Yeah,
and you know, so it's like I gotta bust you, but I like you too. So I really love that relationship.
One of the aspects of that relationship in this episode that I really enjoyed writing was having, you know, that Odo knows that this whole thing is going to blow up in Quark's face sooner or later. And he's just sort of hanging in the background, letting it happen, not intervening, even though Odo could stop it at any time.
Yeah.
He's like, nope, I want to see how Quark ends up.
Yeah. The best one of those, or not the best, but one of those was when Quark's in the office and he's just saying, you know, he finally found the lockbox, you know, and he tells him, you know, wait till they roll in my will, you know, wait till they roll in all my bars of latinum. And the box comes in, it's about this big, and Odo loves it. He's like, oh, here we go, you know, here's your package. So I love just those moments are just, they're just classic comedy. Very, you know, the camaraderie between the DS9 actors is one thing that, you know, because you're able to visualize this when you're writing these episodes, Mark, you just mentioned. That's because the characters kind of stand out as you know what they would do in these kinds of situations. So I imagine, you know, you're visualizing, like Ryan was saying, Worf being really disgruntled about, you know, the Morn thing and, you know, the coy play exchanges in between Quark and Odo. So that's what I think it makes it easier. It, does it not, when you're writing, that you have such a familiarity with the characters?
Absolutely. And in fact, you're reminding me of when I did make that first sale to Next Generation. You know, I was one of thousands of writers writing Next Generation spec scripts and sending them to Paramount Studios and, you know, hoping for the best. And when my script somehow got somebody's attention, the producer, it was a gentleman named Joe Manosky. I don't think he was with the show very long, but at the time he was my hero because he was the guy who discovered my script. And, and I was so curious to know, well, you know, what was it about that script that, you know, caught your eye? And it wasn't the clever science fiction idea. It wasn't the techno-babble stuff. He said, you nailed the characters' voices.
He said, cool.
That's what we look for. So throughout my whole writing career, that's what I've, you know, that's always been number one in my, you know, in my procedure is I've got to be able to nail the characters' voices.
That's really interesting.
That's the most important thing. I was not expecting that response from him, honestly. Mm-hmm. It really took me by surprise, but it really meant a lot to me. And it's been a really good rule to follow for my career.
You know why that's such an interesting thing to hear, because we've heard a couple times from the fans when they say they didn't necessarily like an episode. And we say, well, why not? It seemed like a perfectly fine episode. And they said, well, because Worf wouldn't say that, or Worf wouldn't act like that, or that doesn't sound like something, you know, Kira would do. You know, that's what they're more concerned with, is they've got this attachment after 5.5 years at this point to these characters. And it's comforting for them to know where this character's coming from, or what this character's going to say, or that's such a Quark thing to say, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if somebody doesn't match that, it grates on them like, you know, like two notes that aren't harmonious, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, the writers clearly understood that, and they're like, that's actually rule number one, is don't mess with the characters. Keep it real with them. Wow, that's interesting.
And yet at the same time, I have to be perfectly honest, at the same time, even when you're cognizant of that rule and you're following that rule, or you're trying to follow that rule, there's always still a part of you that's like, maybe I could have Sisko say this instead of what I think he should say. You know, there's always a part of you that's kind of like, maybe I can push it in a little of a direction this way and see if I can get away with it. And you rarely can, but it's always kind of fun to try.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I felt was the driving force behind this episode is something that we as audience take for granted, which is Quark is greedy, and his greed is going to be the thing that is going to, you know, carry the story along. And I felt that in multiple moments. For example, when he was tempted by Morn's ex-wife, quote unquote, you know, she was looking for a 50-50 split. And at some point he's like, you know, I got a 10%. He only gave her 10%, right? Uh-huh. So his greed, he was constantly like negotiating with people, you know, if you're going to, if the threat of death is here, then I'll give you 50%. The temptation of you, I'll give you 10%. And so watching his greed unfold was another kind of, you know, it was the baseline of the story, the thing that was really the driving factor. Mm-hmm. There was a line where she says, you know, I hope you're motivated. He's like, oh, I'm motivated.
You ain't got to worry about that.
Yeah. There's 1,000 bars on the line. I'm motivated.
Yeah.
And even at the kind of the climax of the scene, which I really enjoyed the kind of showdown that they had, which was another reason it reminded me of a Western. I thought everybody would be dead and he'd be the only one standing. Right?
Yeah.
kind of how they do in these Westerns. So that was where I was going with it at some point. But in that exchange between them, you know, she says, well, we can all split it evenly. And, you know, he comes in very, very great delivery for Armin and the way he says it, the voice of reason, you know, like, hey, there's a reasonable thing. Let's just split it and all go our own separate ways. So, yes, I did like this story. I thought the show was very good, very light.
Thanks.
And, you know, it moved along very well. I did like the addition of the kind of idea when he says primitive cultures, you know, he's like, oh, that gold dust you got over there, born. There's some primitive cultures that we can sell it to. I like the idea how they threw a shot out.
That's us.
Shot it. That's us. Yeah. Nice little shot at us. So I thought it was very well written, great performances. You know, and when you're in the middle of this kind of Dominion War, it's great to have these kind of episodes that just offer a little bit of levity and lightheartedness in these kinds of moments. Yeah.
Well, and you know, there's a big part of the script that I'm not even sure if I was aware of it when I was writing the script, but I don't know if you noticed, there was no B story in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The producers were comfortable enough with this story that they felt sure that we could get 60 minutes of solid storytelling out of it without having a B story. And that's kind of amazing. And just, I'll tell you, I had a dream for a long, long time. The whole period of time I was writing for Star Trek, I really, really wanted to do a funny episode. And it's so hard to pitch that because, you know, funny episodes are special episodes. And the producing and writing staff, they love to keep those special episodes to themselves because, you know, they're so much fun to write. So I knew the odds were stacked against me. So it was really a kind of a jaw dropper when Ira said, yeah, we want to do this story. And then to go on and have it be, you know, just the one story without a B story to carry the whole hour was, I feel pretty good about that. It's a nice accomplishment in the world of Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
it is.
There were some, I do want to make sure that we mention some of the performances as well. I mean, we touched on Quark. He delivered a line. I mean, he delivered a lot of lines, he and Odo, very well, and they were all very noticeable. One that I wanted to note, though, very quickly was when Quark said, I won't let anything get between me and my reward, and I can't do it justice. So everybody that's listening, just watch how he delivers that line, which is a good line. But when Armin says it, he just adds a little more to it. Like he makes a choice as an actor, like, what do I want to emphasize? How do I want to deliver this? You know, and he puts the emphasis on me. And I don't know why, it just really worked for me. And I feel like people should go back and watch his performance. But also these two brothers here, the alien brothers that look like the aliens from Enemy Mine, great movie. And those guys, I don't know if the description was mob bosses or something like that, you know, in the script, or if that's just how they read it, or if that was, you know, the direction given to them by the director, who, by the way, I wanted to make sure to check who the director was, because I was like, whoever it is really understands comedy and really, really picked up on the right angles and the right moods for the scenes. But these two brothers, the way they spoke in this slow, deliberate fashion, which kind of made them seem dumb, kind of intimidating, kind of like you're uncertain where they're going to go. I found them to be very interesting in their delivery. And I wanted to know, Mark, was there any kind of description in the script, or was this just what the directors and the actors read into the script and how they interpreted it?
I think I would give credit to the director and the actors on that one. I don't remember putting in that much detail to their personalities. I mean, the original idea was one would be smarter and one would be dumber, right, and eventually that would lead to them, you know, turning on each other in the final scene. But I think that's as far as my characterization went. You know, in a way, they were. You know, they're kind of spoofing stereotype,
right,
you know, crime movie characters, which was, you know, also kind of fun. But yeah, I give credit to the performers and the director. And you're right, it's hard not to watch those guys. They each stand out for their own weird reasons. I'm not quite sure what they are, but for playing guys who look exactly like each other, and, you know, And I'm sure each one of the actors as a performer would love to have a nice little moment or two with that character. And they both managed to pull it off. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Siroc, you're the resident crime boss watcher or mobster movie watcher. What do you think?
I think it's characterized pretty well by Mark in the idea of this stereotypical kind of mob boss, you know, the smart guy and the dumb brawn. Mm-hmm. The brains and the brawn, you know? Yeah. So yeah, that was kind of characterized well. And the fact that you see it in Aliens makes it just that much more unique, because you don't really see it in that context. But you know, also another moment, you know, speaking of really good performances, there was a moment there where I thought, wow, Quark's kind of a good guy. And that was when he was giving the speech at the funeral. And I think Kira says, wow, he surprised me. And Odo, he says, yeah, he surprised me too. Like, but during that moment, it seemed to be that he was giving a very genuine, like heartfelt kind of toast to Morn. And that actually seemed real. It didn't seem like it was part of a con. And the reason I say that is because he didn't really stand much to gain at that point. There was no inheritance. And, you know, he was just kind of speaking from the heart a little bit. I know he did do another scene he performed well was when he was saying, hey, guys, make sure you tell him that Morn's favorite was the, you know, this alcohol, you know.
Yeah, Uridian ale, I believe it was.
And he does that, and then he turns around and bumps into Odo, and even the body language comedy that Armin does, like he'll do the turnaround and bump, and like, oh, wait, you just caught me. Let me talk my way out of this. He's very good at all of that. But I just wanted to say that kind of moment there where I felt like he was speaking from the heart and actually has some really good things to say about Morn. It resonated for me. And I'm just like, wow, this is actually a moment where Quark is showing himself to be, you know, kind of a good guy, you know?
I'm really glad that you mentioned that moment, Siroc, because that was actually a really big deal in the writing of the script. We all knew that moment had to be just pitch perfect. It had to convey a lot of different things coming out of Quark all at the same time. You know, maybe some things that were intentional and some things that weren't intentional, like maybe he really did care for Morn more than he thought he did. But I do remember there was a lot of going back and forth between me and the producers with that scene and that speech. We knew we had to nail it. We knew we had to get it exactly right, because it would really set the tone for the rest of the story. So I'm glad you feel that we hit that sweet spot. It took some work.
Really?
So was there a lot of rewriting on that? Was it back and forth on, like, you know, take this out, add this? Because it really felt like a genuine heart, like, you know, that's what I'd want somebody to say at my at my wake, you know, something kind of heart like that.
I think there was just a general feeling that we could be as funny as we wanted to for the rest of the script, but for this one moment, you know, it calls for being serious. You know, even if there's still a level of, well, this is Quark. I mean, he might say or do something stupid at any second. You know, there's always that presence when you're doing a Quark scene. But I think overall, our general feeling was, Morn's dead. Let's acknowledge that. Let's just let this be a solemn moment for these guys, and let's see what that does to Quark when he basically sort of falls into being solemn and serious, you know, without even realizing it.
And you need that contrast. You need that contrast in a script. Otherwise, if everything is comedic, it feels less funny unless it's in contrast with something else, or it feels less ridiculous. Or if everything's at fast pace, then it kind of gets tiresome. You need like that slow moment, you know? And so that contrast, I think, is always really important. I don't know if that's what you were saying, Sirach.
I was going to say contrast, but I was going to say it in a different way. I thought the contrast was there for setting up the next scene, which was when Odo calls him into the office and says, hey, you've been, you know, you're the sole inheritor of everything Morn owns. It sets that up to be, one, believable, because here is the guy that actually, you know, had the service for him, who really actually says something heartfelt about him, who probably spend more time with him than anybody else in that bar. So it seemed genuine. And so then when he gets the inheritance, it seems like he would be deserving of it, because he actually says, hey, what do you mean? I'm the guy that just did the funeral for Mort. I'm the guy who's best friend. I'm doing a whole tribute to him. So it made you buy into the story even more when Odo's like, yeah, okay, yeah, I guess, you know, who else is it? If it's not you, I guess who else would it be, you know? Mm-hmm. I kind of bought the story more. So to me, it was good for that contrast. So it wasn't just about his greed per se, but it was also like, maybe he is the best friend that Morn has, you know? Maybe they have had conversations.
Hey, the guy that's handing him his beer, that's his guy right there.
Yeah, right.
That's his man.
Yeah. Hey. Exactly.
We got to run in a couple minutes, but I want to make sure be sure and mention, Mark, that you have a podcast and a book. Can you please tell us about them?
Sure. The podcast is called Farfetched, FETCHED, Farfetched. It's on Podbean. You can find it on just about any podcast platform. It's generally all about my life as a writer. And what I'm going to be starting in the new year is going through all my old Star Trek files and pitching all of my unsold pitches to whoever is listening to the podcast. So I'm kind of excited about that. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And yes, I have a book. It was published a few years ago. It's called The Close Encounters Man. And it's a biography of the astronomer J. Allen Hynek, who inspired the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Cool.
And who developed the whole close encounters terminology for UFO sightings. So,
and how can people keep track of all this stuff? It seems like you're on Twitter fairly active, and you'll let people know there.
I'm on Twitter handle? As Mark UFO Connell, but that's probably it's the at symbol, right?
At ampersand. Mark O'Connell. Oh, the at.
Yes. Yeah, it's not an ampersand, it's an at. At Mark O'Connell. MarkOconnell _1.
Nowadays, we got to add ones to things, you know. That's just how it goes.
Yeah. Well, if I had known how Twitter was going to work back when I started my account, I probably would have been a little more clever, but what can you do?
You can always change it, but after a while, you're like, I'm just going to keep it forever, because Everybody already knows it is that.
Exactly.
So also very quickly, the Trekkian names, Siroc, you mentioned the Uridian Ale. We also had Libanian Beets, Lisepian Lottery, and Lisepian Mother's Day Heist. That's like the Trekkian names are like when they just kind of get like make up some alien world, add the IAN, and it's something we all know. You know, Libanian Beets, Uridian Ale, Lisepian Lottery. Lisepian Mother's Day.
I got one more in there. Yeah.
Oh, really?
I had one more.
What was it?
It was, I don't know. Maybe you can tell me what it was. Bashir comes to the bar. He's like, where's Quark? And then he says, well, he's not here. And he says, well, because I miss his Tillamine troughs. I didn't know what that was referring to, but I figured it's a drink that he makes or something.
Must be a drink. Yeah. I don't recognize that one.
Yeah. But it's not really in the nomenclature, but it was kind of a reference. Close enough.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mark, for joining in the fun. Actually, you know what? We're not out of the woods yet. I've got to put this tie on for just a second.
Uh-oh, here it comes, ladies and gentlemen. What?
Oh.
It's time for the nitpick number one. We are not a primitive culture. We are a dangerous, savage child race, according to Q.
Oh.
Of course, Quark isn't the first one to call us a primitive culture. I believe Deanna Troi called us a primitive culture in Star Trek First Contact, the movie, when she gets drunk. She goes, it's a primitive culture. Anyway, so we want to give a very special thanks to Carmen, a.k.a. Skillet, TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri, Yvette Blackman, Tom, Homer Freezy out somewhere in New Yeezy, Eve England out in Wales, Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel, Titus Moeller, Tim Baum, Darlena Marie, John Mann, Rex A. Wood, Dr. Mohammed Noor, Joe Balsarati, Tierney C. Diekman, Bill Victor
Arukin.
Ed Maurer, Anil O. Palat, Thomas Collings, Anil K. Chander, Lawrence Niels, Isaac Stock, Ed Jarrett, and of course, a very, very special thanks to Dr. Susan V. Gruner.
All right.
I was waiting for you to say something there, Siroc, but I was like, no, that, what can you say? What, Gruner, I don't know. Anyway.
No, that was a nice list of names. That's one of the longest roll calls we've done. Mm-hmm. So welcome aboard, everybody new.
And Mark, thank you so much for joining us. We had a really great time with you. We appreciate you taking the time for us. We really were looking forward to it, and it was awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. I was really excited to be invited, and I've had a great time with both of you. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Mark. Everybody else, stick around for the free-for-all. We'll be right back on The Seventh Rule.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, guys. It is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun, too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino-style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, and welcome to The Seventh Rule. This is Tierney C. Diekman doing my first introduction. Let's hope I can get it right. Your hosts, obviously, are the wonderful Siroc Lofton and Ryan T. Husk. Joining us today, we have the gorgeous Dr. Sue Gruner out in Florida. We have the fabulous Gul Duscott. You are in South Carolina, right?
Yeah, you got it.
Woohoo! TJ Jackson Bay. TJ, I don't remember where you live. Where are you?
But it's part of his name.
Missouri. In Missouri. That's right. Of course, the gorgeous, fabulous, equally mysterious Eve England out in Wales. And is that all we have with us today?
No.
We have Melissa Longo in the house.
Oh.
Classing up the joint.
Oh my God. How could I forget? And of course, Melissa Longo. I mean, she's everything. There are too many adjectives that I can use to describe
her. Lots and lots of adjectives.
So many. She's wonderful, and I hold her close to my heart just looking at her and her beautiful everything. And yeah, I'm in Virginia, who cares? But welcome. Today we are doing Who Mourns for Morn.
It's a fun one today. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah.
Very nice.
So a couple things that we skipped over in the initial recording. Number one is Jake Sisko guesses the IMDb score.
I'm going to say that this was a 7.3. That's my guess.
Does anybody else have any guesses that doesn't already know? Eve doesn't know. You could tell because she was thinking when he said 7.3, she was like, is that what I would give?
Yeah, I think that's about right. Yeah.
Me too.
A2, Sue?
Yeah.
Tell us how you really feel.
Wow. It was a 7.7 today.
All right.
7.7. Star Trek fans enjoy comedy, I guess. It was a and good more. Fun one. And Mourn.
Like Mourn. Yeah.
The other thing was, were there any NAMs? I didn't catch any.
Mm-hmm. Oh, was there? What was it? I missed
yes,
it.
Yes. It was my brother fixed something, and that's Rob. Oh.
Very good.
He had Rom scan the internal sensors for Latin. Which, if you can do that, how are there not more robberies? Oh my God!
Yeah, that's the first thing I would do.
Yeah. Yeah. Scan everything.
Do you? I got some Latin over here, and I still get it.
Very good.
Yeah.
Any others? Just that one.
I didn't catch any other.
Good catch, though. Good job, guys. All right. Well. TJ, you told us a few months ago this was your favorite episode ever of Deep Space Nine or of all Star Trek. Can you tell us why?
I don't really recall, I don't recall making that statement. But it is a fun one. It's a pretty wild ride that we get to go on with Quark. Which we know he's only after the Latinum, but all of this other entanglement stuff, you know, comes up with this woman pretending to be his wife, who, you know, Quark then becomes interested in Latinum and Umox.
Yeah, like the line when he says, I'm really going to need some Umox after this.
And it's just a good, fun episode. I think my favorite line is when he's in the container, like, what am I going to do with all of this worthless gold?
Yeah. So good.
Definitely fun. Tierney, have you watched this episode recently or as recently as today? And what did you think?
Yeah, I watched it with coffee this morning. And I love the subtleties of how good this episode is. Everything from individual performances to the makeup. Michael Westmore won an award for this one, I believe. And these are some of the first new aliens, even though they didn't give species names for Crit and Nosk or Laurel of the season. They just, as described, wanted somebody green for the season, and that was something I've noticed even in the past in watch throughs of just subtle performances of two new people to just come in out of nowhere. I'm sorry, four new people other than what's his first name, is it Gregory Itzen? plays Hane. Can't remember off the top of my head. Either way, he's been in a number of series. I think actually all four, in Voyager, Enterprise, DS9, and possibly Next Gen. He's been all over the place as far as the Next Generation era series, who comes in as Hane. And then the guy who plays Nosk has also done a few. And actually, he and the guy who played Hane were both in Airplane, for random side characters. But anyway, so the just little things like performances, small details, like the mud they used for Morn's bed is drilling mud, as a substance that they use for drilling into the earth, something along those lines. And things like they have him vacuum up like a wetback through the mud, and you can see the hose look like it's sucking something out of it. I don't know what they use to do that. Actually, come to think of it, yes, I do. It's probably a regular vacuum, because you don't actually see it sucking the mud. There was something else I had made note of. I'm going to minimize this a little bit and see if I don't knock everybody out. One thing was that we had lots of everybody else, but we didn't have a lot of Morn. And Armin Shimmerman had made a comment that he personally was not fond of the episode, commenting that one of the inequities about Mark Alan Shepard still being an extra. Here's a whole episode around someone who's basically a background performer, and that's ridiculous. The definition of a background performer is someone you don't pay attention to. There's someone in the background. So how can you have an entire episode based around them? It shows one of the inequities of what's happening over at the show, that the producers are still treating Mark as though he's an extra. And Rene Auberjonois often says, I've created a monster in Mark, because I was very solicitous about him in the beginning. And so was David Livingston, who was not only a director, but also our line producer. Between the two of us, we got a lot of coverage for Mark. So it's taken off from there, which, I mean, is kind of true. He wasn't really a background character. He wasn't really an extra, but he didn't have lines. He kind of did the Maris and Frasier thing, but he was also Norm from Cheers. So there's a lot of things to this episode, even though it's slower paced. There's not a lot of background music, even. It's quiet. It's got its mystery elements. I love a good mystery. Really just overall, it's a good, steady episode with good performances. It became more about Quark than it did Morn, and Armin Shimmerman, of course, makes him shine, and that's fantastic.
What were you reading from earlier? Was that the companion?
No, that is from a Star Trek Monthly issue 46, and that was from Memory Alpha. The companion didn't have a whole lot of information. I wish that it had more, especially given all the little details that they had included. Mm-hmm. But I did have a couple questions for Sirach to finish up my long-windedness. What did they use for Levanian beets? For that whole container, or at least the top of the container, full of something, and it lets off this dusty smoke. And they do it for every container. There's four of these giant, you know, things full of something. And every time Odo opens one and slams the cover down, it lets off this dusty, you know, rotting root vegetable smoke. Like, you can smell it, you can feel the heat of fruit vegetable decay coming off of it. And I've always wondered what they used. Do you know, Sirach?
Yes, they imported a special
here we go
yamic sauce from Uruguay. I have no idea what they use. Those guys are, you know, they are experts at just their craft, each one of them. You mentioned the makeup in this episode and Westmore, but it's not just him. It's all of the visual effects guys. It's the set designers. Mm-hmm. It's the guys who are in charge of props. And all of these things have to be made. So, I mean, I don't know what they use. I just know that the guys that are tasked with making stuff are as good as it gets in there in what they do. Like even I mentioned earlier, the portrait of Morn that Ryan has behind him. Yeah. I thought it was so good. I'm like, that's, you know, somebody had to come up with that. Somebody had to, you know, put that together for this episode. And, you know, that's just one thing in the background of the shot, you know, that's how much preparation is involved in putting these things together. So no, I don't know what they use. I'm pretty sure it's a special effect of some kind of, you know, dry ice or whatever that they use to make these kinds of steam and smoke. I have no real particular information on that.
Tierney, you said you had one other quick question for Mr. Srock Lofton.
Yeah. Do you know why Mark Alan Shepard never had credit in the episode for any of his performances?
Background.
Because he was never given lines. It's really simple. The Screen Actors Guild is simple about that. If you have lines, you get paid as an actor, as a voice actor, it's a different rate, even one word. Oftentimes as actors, you know, we would get on a set of a commercial or something and you would be chosen sometimes to give a line.
Yeah.
And you would know that was like the difference between making $100 that day and now making 2,000 plus residuals.
That's winning the Lesepian lottery right there, man.
Right.
For one word?
Yeah. For one word.
Even a sound. Even a sound or a grunt.
Wow.
For like the 6 hours of work they used for his regurgitation noise.
Gross.
At the end. I know, it's super gross. And it lasts like 5 seconds. Yeah. And Scott can probably tell us all about that with his sound knowledge.
Well, speaking about sound knowledge, Melissa Longo, who's wearing a Chat Pack shirt, it looks like. Yep. You can get yours at walkingartmadebymelissa.com. Because shockingly, .com was not already taken, so you didn't have to go to .net. What did you think about this episode?
It's a fun episode. And I like the Matador painting, the velvet painting, because it's fun. And as we were mentioning before the recording, it was purchased in the cards, Jake and Nog episode at the auction for the Willie Mays baseball.
Willie
card.
Mays, yeah.
Woohoo! Yeah, it was fun. And I thought the mud was really soupy. It looks like really soupy mud. And I liked when Quark says, OJ Da. OJ Da, of course. You know.
I don't remember that line.
OJ Dar with the
OJ Dar. Yeah. Of course. Got it. Huh? That was funny.
Yeah.
Universal Translator is so particular in what it wants to translate things through.
Yeah.
So funny. Yeah.
Melissa, did you laugh a minute in this episode?
I don't know if I laughed a minute. I will say that Armin is brilliant. And then Armin and Renee are brilliant together. Yeah. All of their moments together are wonderful to watch. And I could watch them forever and ever and ever because they're just brilliant. And it's wonderful to see masters of their craft playing off of each other. You know, they're well-seasoned and they know their stuff, they know their lines. And then that just leaves room for the play and then they, you know, playing off of each other. So they do that brilliantly, I think.
Yeah.
The extra stuff is fun. And Morn, oh, fun tidbit. the Bajoran that Quark has sit in Morn's chair is Mark Allen Shepard, who played Morn. Yeah. So Morn is still sitting in his chair.
That's cool. That's great.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice he was a Bajoran.
Oh, yeah.
Was he? He had the... Oh. I didn't even notice that.
They dressed him as a Bajoran security officer. Mm. And when... when Quark's giving a little eulogy for him to keep it warm for more, and he brings him over, and he's got this look on his face like, what the hell are you doing, Ferengi? Freaking great.
Yeah.
Melissa, is that the thing? Yeah, we covered it a little bit in the previous scene or in the previous segment. Yeah, there he is in the little corner there. And his acting was really good. You know, it wasn't like some guy that didn't know what he was doing outside of the suit. He actually had, you know, good reactions, and we know he's good with his eyes at least.
And with sets like this that are kind of enclosed environments, you're going to have reoccurring background. Like in Blue Bloods, they have reoccurring backgrounds that come on to work in the precincts as police officers. In Nurse Jackie, they have reoccurring nurses that come to work as, you know, because you see them all the time and it keeps the continuity there. So,
Seems like right here we should mention our good pal Tracy Coco as Lieutenant Jay in Next Generation as evidence of what you're talking about too, Melissa. Yeah, that's a good point. Right. Now, Eve, you were shaking your head when Tierney said they didn't give much in the companion. Did they give anything in the companion, or what did you think of this episode?
Yeah, I really like this episode because it's funny that it is a Morn episode, but actually it's all about Quark. But I thought that it's quite the one thing that the companion does talk about. It says how it took them such a long time to make a Morn episode because he wasn't allowed to say anything to have the running gag. So this was the first one where they actually had a good idea to make a Morn episode. And I think it worked really well. There wasn't a huge amount in the companion actually, but the bit I would just add from Tierney's bit about the funny regurgitation noise that he makes at the end. So that took them half a day. And then the quote at the end is saying, they said, well, why didn't you just get someone to belch and record them belching? And they were like, well, you know, you can't have someone doing that because it's very un-Star Trek-like. And I said, that is just, I said, spend half a day to make a belt. That was just really funny. And the only other point I was going to just flag is it says that this is the first time that we established that latinum is actually a liquid rather than anything else.
Right.
Yeah. I hadn't realized that because I think you just get so used to it, don't you? So you forget. But this is the first time they were trying to work out how to sort of get that into the episode and get the gag at the end with Morn having swallowed it. So I thought that was cool.
And then you figure like that tiny little drop was basically 1/10 of what words would fit theoretically in all those giant bricks. So there's really just a tiny bit in each brick. So that was another interesting thing.
Oh, that's really cool.
But Goldu Scott already knew all this, right?
I trade in latinum a lot. Yeah. Dax says they got tired of making change with an eyedropper. That was pretty funny.
That was funny.
Imagine how long they're back in Kirk's time, just dripping, you know, like, oh, pinhead. Oh, there you go. There's 5 hours worth. Yeah, this is another one of my go-tos right there. Like whenever you're sick and at home and you want to feel better, you watch, you know, Magnificent Ferengi, Who Mourns for Morn in the Cards. Take Me Out to the Holosuite. They're just my go-tos.
Yes.
Yeah, they make you feel better every single time. But I loved, like, particularly talking about the makeup award, that funeral scene had, I mean, smiling Klingons helping each other. And man, Morn is popular. He's super out there. Just everybody was loving. I loved the makeup jobs. Absolutely. That was especially even the bruising, the green bruising on the skin after he'd gotten hit. That was great too. But the biggest thing I took away from this once again is DS9 really has a thing about warm seats. Keep warm for Morn. And what if we finally got after this? Morn comes back at the end and he sits down and he just finally goes, "Oh, it's warm."
One line.
Oh, you kept it warm for me, and then wah, 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 and it's just.
That's funny. Sue, hey there, Sue, out in space. First of all, is your seat warm? And secondly, beyond that, do you have any thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, it's a fun episode.
Oh no.
just yeah. Well, she got the one line that you guys wanted to give to Morn. Yeah. Oh, there you are. You're back, Sue. So we heard you say it was a fun episode.
Yep. I love that those guys said he was a prince. And
that would have been a great story. Yeah. Prince, we would
believe it. And Quark actually believed it for a few minutes. Yeah. I know. Morn's a prince. it was fun. And the only thing I don't get was the bed, the mud bed. How do you sleep in that? Do you drown in it, or do you like stick your head in the top, on the side?
Maybe he's got special lungs too.
He's got double stomach.
Right. Stuck stomach.
Yeah, that's a good point. Did you have a favorite moment, Sue?
No, I enjoyed the whole thing. I'm thinking of when the painting got smashed over his head. That was pretty cool.
WWF.
Is that a velvet matador? I'm curious. Was it a velvet painting?
As tacky as you can get.
As tacky as you can get.
And I want a reproduction for my wall.
Well,
I do want to see Morn with hair, though. I think that would be funny.
With who?
Morn with hair. That would be
funny. Yeah. Looking like Elvis.
What does Morn look like with hair? I wish they had kept one thing though of the fake storylines that Laurel had actually been his wife, proving that Morn's got game.
Oh, he turned Jazia down.
I know.
Yeah.
That's proof right there. She admitted he turned her down.
Sirach, who do you think is Morn's type then, if not Jadzia? Maybe he likes Captain Baudet.
Can we tell what's on his mind?
Yeah, I know what's on his mind.
Morn's type. That's a good one. I don't know.
The question of the day.
You would think it would be Jadzia because she hangs out at the bar more than anybody else.
Maybe it's Lita. Maybe that's why he's always at the bar. Or maybe it's Quark. Maybe he's just sitting there being like, just keep serving me drinks, blue maybe eyes or Quark. Whatever.
Waiting for him to realize that's it.
Well, any final thoughts on this, Sirach, before we run?
Not really. I just, it was a fun episode. You guys really touched on a lot of the points, how fantastic Armin is as an actor to be able to carry this whole thing basically with a guest star cast. I think that the interplay between Odo and Quark is just magical. Every time the two of them get back on screen together, it's just this interplay between them that's, it's kind of like two brothers kind of picking on each other, and I love it. I thought as I was watching it that I didn't know what was going to happen next. And that was another aspect of it that I enjoyed, that I couldn't easily predict this is going to go like this or that's going to go like that. It was not that easy to figure out what was going to happen. And I also like the seriousness with which everybody kind of felt the loss of Morn, even though it wasn't the real loss. I like the way Sisko was like, serious about it. Right. And I like, and the rest of the, the core crew, they were like really serious about how they felt about Morn, which just shows you the kind of level of camaraderie that the DS9 station has amongst its personnel and the family environment that everybody has living on that station together. Mm-hmm. Like Morn's not in Starfleet. He's not in the ops. you know, but still he feels like he's a part of what we're doing because, you know, he's part of the extended family of the entire DS9 crew that's aboard, you know, the station. So I like the fact that they do develop stories on even the most external character from the epicenter of the story. So I think that's kudos to really good writing and the fact that you can carry this story is another kudos to Armin Shimerman and his ability to really act. I mean, the guy is just good at what he does and he's mastered the Quark mindset and he plays it so well. So I just love this story. It was very good to watch, very light. I felt like it may have could have come earlier. It feels like they waited six seasons to, you know, give us a little bit of more. They could have,
yeah, done this
season three or four. Could have worked in season four. I'm just saying, yeah. You know, they didn't have to wait till the end. But other than that, it was a good story. Mm-hmm. I liked it.
I think we need a Prince Morn t-shirt.
Yes.
Or a variation.
We need, well, first we need Prince Morn Prince. And then,
right,
oh, man,
and then we can do it.
Well, he thought you
keep it warm.
Keep it warm for Morn.
Oh my gosh!
Somebody needs to write this down because otherwise we're gonna forget.
Get on it, Melissa.
Yeah.
All right. Keep it warm for Morn.
Well, speaking of which, our good friend Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel sends her regrets, but she was having technical difficulties. That's why she popped in for a few minutes and then stormed out. She didn't really storm out. She just said she had audio problems and now she can't pop in. So she's probably going to pop in on in the middle of our next recording at some point. But anyway, we do appreciate her popping in for the minute that she did. We also want to say thank you very much to Dr. Sue Gruner, TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri, Eve England out in Wales, Guldu Scott, Tierney C. Diekman, Melissa Longo. We also want to thank Mark O'Connell, the writer of this episode, for joining us earlier. Great time. Awesome. Can't wait to have you back. Sirach, what a great time. Let's do it again, maybe in like a week or something.
Let's do it.
Yeah, whatever. We're rebels. Mm-hmm. All right, everybody at home for, oh wait, I think Anne-Marie just tried to pop on.
She here?
Yep. Thank you, everybody. And until next time, always remember the seventh rule. Okay, I'm just, go ahead.
say something, Anne-Marie. We're waiting.
Hilarious.
Oh, she's got one.
Before we run, do you have any thoughts on this exquisite, amazing, hilarious
episode? No, just that it's amazing. And also, I really wanted Deep Space Nine Storage Wars on Annie. I wanted to know so much more about all those storage units that were abandoned. But that's about it. Yeah. It's just so perfect.
What did you give this on IMDb?
And, obviously a 10.
Obviously a 10. There we go. Well, thanks, Anne-Marie, for braving the technical difficulties. We appreciate your patience.
Patience is important to us.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. You're
important to Bashir, too.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyways.
That was a Husker Ryan.
Give me your agonizer right now.
All right. Anyway, for everybody, including and especially Mr. Aaron Eisenberg, thank you all for joining us. And until next time, always remember the seventh rule.